Welcome back into another edition of College Golf Talk. Burko and Brentley with you, and for the first time in 100-plus episodes, we're on the road. This is a remote from Wednesday night in Scotland at the home of golf. So I guess if we're going to take it away from our homes or hotels, if you're going to do it, let's go big, and that's what we're doing here tonight.
This is the Bill O'Reilly episode. We're doing it live.
Close. But we're going to put it in the prompter and we're going to do it live.
I'll tell you what, though, Burko. I am ready to go because I hopped in the shower before this episode and never fails the, we've been here for, I think, 3 nights. And the shower is a sliding glass door where you have to slide the door, reach around, and turn the water on. Now, there is one of those handle things that is the kind of a normal shower head that you can deattach. And then there's the shower, like,
Straight down.
Yeah. And I like the straight down. Mm-hmm. So I, the first night, changed it to that, first morning, whatever. Great. Go to take my next shower after housekeeping, blasted in the face with cold water. So day two, I forget, blasted in the face with cold water. I was trying to be smart tonight, and I thought, all right, I'm going to make sure that I turn it before I do it, blast in the face with cold water. The housekeeper lady on the third time forgot to change it. So that's how my night's going. But other than that, it's been an absolute dream week.
You know what the simple fix is? Don't get housekeeping. Save them the time. I never get housekeeping in a hotel. I periodically will get fresh towels if I'm there. Hey, great. I can pull my bed up. I can put my clothes on the couch. And that's it. So think about that moving forward.
Pro tip.
Second edition of the St. Andrews Links Collegiate in the books. And another great one. Thrilled to be back. Arizona women getting the job done today on the old course. Individually, yesterday on the Jubilee after 36 holes of stroke play. Ashley Yoon from Northwestern winning. Zach Polo from Arizona. And we saw a little bit of everything weather-wise, as you would expect. And the fourth champion in 2024, the Northwestern men, the Wildcats, getting the job done over the Wildcats of Arizona. And we are thrilled to have David Ingles, the head coach of Northwestern, join us on this edition of College Golf Talk. And David, first and foremost, congratulations. Thank you for carving out some time. Your immediate reaction just a couple hours removed from getting the job done at a place that means so much to you.
Well, first of all, I feel like I just learned about how to take a shower and stay in hotels a little bit better. So I appreciate you guys. Yeah, I appreciate the insight. But no, this is, this one's been marked on the calendar for a while, for us, very Scottish flavor to our team. Obviously this is home for me, and, we have three Scotsmen, as part of our lineup this week. So to get the win on the old course, the home of golf, it's extra special, and I'm just really proud of the players, the way they fought hard today in some tough conditions and got the job done when we've really fallen short a little bit in final rounds this year. In particular to the Arizona Wildcats. They've got a great team, and Jim and Matt do a great job coaching them, and they actually won our home tournament a couple weeks ago. So felt like it was, you know, time for us to step up in a final round and play well, and we did that today.
And to that point, you and I discussed it multiple times through the week of maybe a little chip on the shoulder. The other Wildcats had gotten the better of you twice in the fall. How much of a motivating factor truly was that for your kids, and what can that maybe do springboarding into the spring ahead?
Yeah, it was certainly a big motivation. I think, you know, the way we finished yesterday was tough to handle. We were tied for the lead with maybe four holes to go, and really just kind of folded. We made some big numbers coming in on 15 and 16. And it was a tough way to finish. So we really got the guys together last night. We talked about moving past that quickly, and just setting our sights on coming out today, all guns blazing and firing. And, it was a slow start the first round, and then rounds two and three, we really got off to good starts, and that kind of, allowed us to hit our stride. And, when the tough holes hit in the back nine, we were ready to kind of hang tough.
People talk about playing at home, and it can be an advantage, but also a little bit of a curse. Was that no more true than with your team this week?
Yeah, I mean, they were all so excited, but certainly to come back and play in front of family and friends and with some added expectation, you know, that, but that comes with the territory. If you want to be a good player, if you want to be a good team, you're going to have to deal with expectations and figure out how to manage that. And ultimately, the best teams are the ones that can play under the heat like that. So, I mean, for Cameron Adam in particular, his parents have not, they visited him in Evanston at campus, but they've never seen him play in a college tournament. So this was the first time that they've had a chance to see him. His grandparents were here. Uncle was here.
His dog.
His dog, Meg. You know, the whole clan. So extra special for him, and just really proud of the performance. He put a very complete performance together over the three rounds, and fitting that he would sink the final putt and making birdie on the last hole.
There's times in this game where you experience like these ultimate highs like you did this afternoon. You can also get punched in the mouth a little bit. After the first two events, was there a moment where you guys met together and regrouped, or was it more of an individual effort to turn things around? And how can 3 days like this, even though it's a format that you don't play a lot, smaller field, how can that turn things around?
Yeah, I mean, certainly we met as a group. You know, that the first two events at Sahali and Olympia Fields, there might not have been a tougher start schedule-wise in terms of the strength of those fields. We finished 11th and 13th, so we were kind of behind quickly on the 500 rule. We talked about that. Again, I think it's good to have those things out in the open, just so the players understand where things are at. And there is a sense of urgency that we needed to get the ship turned around quickly and moving in the right direction. And we did that at our home event. We finished third at the Wyndon in a good field. You know, we beat some quality teams, didn't quite get the job done the final round, had a chance to win, and Arizona pulled away and played a great round. And again, this week was another step forward. And I don't think you can underestimate the value of playing a great final day like that when you had to against a quality team live on the Golf Channel, all the pressure and expectation that comes with that. I mean, you're making putts under pressure. You have to hit great shots on the last 5-6 holes here back into the wind. So I think we can take a lot of confidence from this, a lot of belief, and know that if we play the way we played today, you know, we can really hang with anyone.
I want to circle back to a family conversation. When you and I were on the first tee this morning, you introduced me to your brother. He said parents weren't far behind. You just talked about the support Cameron Adam had. What was it like for you to have your family alongside to watch you do what you do as a head coach and to win at St. Andrews?
Yeah, it's very special. I mean, my parents won't travel to the U.S. anymore, so when I see them over here, I'm fortunate that I get to come back regularly enough to feel like I see them a decent amount, and was back this summer just a couple months ago on a recruiting trip. But certainly they don't get the chance to see us compete. So it was extra special for them to be here the first 2 days. Neil, my brother, who you met, he's a character. Our team love him. He was sending, you know, me texts to send to the team in our group chat as the pep talk this week. And he doesn't mince his words. So the guys get a kick out of it. And it was special for him. He's never traveled to the U.S. to see us either. So for him to be out there, he made signs. They put banners up on the 18th hole of the Jubilee. So, you know, it's extra special and means a lot for me to be able to share it with them.
This country, this place, give those listening a sense of your background here at the home of golf, sort of how you learned your craft to come play college golf in the States.
Yeah, I grew up just outside Edinburgh, a little village called Roslyn. My home club's Glencorse Golf Club. It's 5,200 yards from the tips, par 64. Very typical Scottish golf club, nothing fancy. And yeah, just about 14 or so years old, I kind of set my sights on wanting to come to the U.S. and just really wanted to play college golf, wanted to play on the PGA Tour. Most like everybody, every young golfer that aspires to play in college. And you know, just really set my sights on that, and was fortunate to end up on a golf scholarship at the University of Tulsa. Played for Bill Brogdon, had a tremendous experience there, and then tried my luck professionally. Ultimately, wasn't good enough, and just feel really fortunate and grateful that 14 years ago, Pat Goss gave me a chance as an assistant coach for him at Northwestern, and that's turned in. This is my 15th season now there, and what a special group of coaches we have on both sides. Emily and Beth have been with their program now. This is their 17th season. So the four of us have been coaching both golf teams now there for 14 years, and I think that's pretty unusual to have that kind of continuity over such a long period of time.
Is it crazy to think that it's been 24 years since you won the British Boys?
Yeah, I feel old. But yeah, that was 2000. That was about the weekend, and that was the Saturday, and classes started in Tulsa on the Tuesday. So it was a whirlwind getting there. But yeah, that's a special memory. And I at the time, you felt like that was just the next step on the ladder, and I was going to move up and you know, win tour events and play in Ryder Cups and win majors, and obviously none of that ever materialized. So I look back on that now as one of the, you know, the big achievements, and something that, you know, I'm certainly very proud of.
And you beat David Skins, right? Like,
yeah, David's really, I've followed his career closely, especially recently, just seeing the success he's had, winning on the Corn Ferry, and then now, you know, playing so well on the PGA Tour, and just, yeah, we had a good tussle, came down to the 36th hole, and I managed to clip him on that one, but he's obviously turned out the much better player.
Why is coaching the right place for you in your life and in your career after the aspirations, as many have, you alluded to it, the numbers show it's a small amount. Why do you think you at Northwestern doing what you're doing is right where it all ended up to be?
Yeah, Northwestern is a very special place. And, you know, Pat's been there for 30 years. He played golf there, and he's really, turned it into an incredible all-around program, both the men and the women, and just all the resources and support we have. It's an incredible place to be, and you really feel like it's part of a family. So it's a special place. I love coaching. When it got to the point where I realized my playing career was over and dead in the water, it was either go down the PGA professional road or get into college golf. And certainly the idea of being a college coach was much more exciting, but it probably took over 2 years of applying for every assistant coach position. I was looking at that NCAA market all the time, trying to find a job as an assistant coach. And to be honest, nobody would really give me much of a look, just no experience. And just feel fortunate that Pat took a chance on someone with no experience.
What do you think Pat saw in you 15 years ago to say, all right, good player, not sure you can coach, but yeah, come on aboard?
Yeah, I think he will tell you the coaching part of it isn't that complicated. but I think he really got the sense that I wanted to do it. I wanted to be a coach, and you know, starting out as an assistant coach in 2010, it wasn't much of a salary. It was long hours. It was a lot of time on the road. But thankfully, I was at a point in life that I was ready for all of that. I wanted to do whatever it took, and I just wanted to get a foot in the door to have a chance to have a career. And you know, and really wasn't excited about the prospect of working at a golf club, although I had done that for a number of years down in Florida. So I think he just thought in the beginning that I really wanted to do it, and I convinced him that, you know, I was gonna work hard at it. And ultimately, at that point in time, I really wanted to be the next coach at Tulsa and take over for Coach Brogdon.
Well, a little bit colder weather up in Chicago. It hasn't been that long, you know, that coaching in the Big Ten was seen as this kind of huge challenge because the weather's not good. There's so many kind of external factors working against you. How has that changed, and what has allowed that to change, whether it be NIL or things of that nature?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Certainly NIL for us hasn't been a big factor. I would say, you know, there's a lot of great coaches in the Big Ten, and I think if you're going to do it well up north, you've got to be good at developing players. The winter time lends itself to really digging in to the nuts and bolts of what you need to do to become a better player. And you know, our indoor facilities They've really improved over the years. Everyone in the Big Ten's got a great indoor facility. A lot of northern schools have now as well. And then I think the rule around practice where you can practice out of state, that changed about 10 years or so ago. Maybe my first couple years in coaching, that wasn't the case. And now being able to travel anywhere, anytime, as long as you don't miss class. You just got to go fundraise for that money to go take a practice trip to Florida or Arizona, and you can do it. So in the end, I don't think the weather really is much of a hindrance to us. And, you know, I can certainly make the case that there's days in the spring, and we saw days like today, that experience in those kind of conditions will toughen you up and can help you turn into a better player. And obviously, Illinois is the golden example of that over the last decade or so. They've just shown that you can be a great team. And certainly, you know, Northwestern, back when Pat, the early days when Pat started coaching and Luke was on the team, we had some great runs and some top 10 programs at that time as well.
Some people would argue that Luke is the most decorated, and probably a lot of people would argue that, the most decorated player in Northwestern history, but probably the most popular player who only spent a short time at Northwestern is Matthew Fitzpatrick. Can you take us behind the scenes on what it was like recruiting Matt to come play for Northwestern, even though it was a short while, and what it was like to have him on the team?
Sure. First of all, Luke is the most decorated player.
I was going to jump in. I don't know where Brentley was going. Yeah. I was in the booth, had a blast with Luke for three consecutive
days. I try to be safe. I try to be conservative.
1999 NCAA champion, 13 wins at Northwestern, four-time All-America selection, 1999 Fred Haskins award winner.
Back, I feel like, to back, Phil Mickelson.
He was going there, I was waiting for the no disrespect to any other Wildcat. Luke will always be the standard at Northwestern.
Hey, I'm only, how old am I, 34? I don't, you know, who knows, you know?
Well, to that point, quick
sidebar. I try
to
be conservative.
Three players have won the Big Ten back-to-back years for Northwestern. Luke Donald is one of them. One of them is here this
Daniel
week.
Daniel Savard.
Yes. Can you give me the third one? Back in 1937 and
1938.
Look at him. He's grinding like he knows the guy from 90 years ago.
I have no clue.
Sid Richardson.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
it's part of the pre-tournament broadcast prep, Brentley, when I have a former number one ranked player in the world, the European Ryder Cup team captain. And by the way, thought Luke did a heck of a job adding the insight to what this place is about. And trust me, there was a smile on his face when Daniel secured that big point. And he's like, looks like Northwestern has a team title. So really enjoyed having Luke.
A second sidebar, and then we'll get into Fitzy. Pat shared maybe a little motivational text that Luke sent you guys last night. Is that something that's shareable, or?
I'm trying to think of what the text was, but.
Or was it dinner?
We had dinner. Yeah. We had dinner, and you know, Luke's.
You guys got into Little Italy?
I booked it 3 months ago. I've been there before.
He's a pro. Yeah. Come on. Mm-hmm. That's another pro tip for saying it.
Yeah, I think, you know, Luke, obviously, he's the Ryder Cup captain, and what he did with the European team and the way he led them last year was so inspirational. And you know, his standard is excellence. You know, it just it's so obvious that he just pursues excellence and wants to win. I think it's been really great. One of the things that I've valued the most about you know, coaching this team at Northwestern, and the alumni have stayed so connected, and they're willing to share time and their knowledge with the players. So for Luke to come to dinner. In preseason, we had David Lipsky and Dylan Wu, both PGA Tour players, playing in our qualifiers and hanging out with the guys, going and taking them at lunch, hanging out at practice. And it's just invaluable for these guys to ask them questions. And, you know, they got to spend 2 hours last night with the Ryder Cup captain. It's just incredible. And it's so nice of these players to give back time like that, you know, and really pay it forward.
I think it was something like they had to be a little tougher to get it done.
Yeah, and he was right. Yeah. I do remember the text now. I don't know if it was completely shared with the team, but
now it is.
It was maybe paraphrased, and that was the message.
Fitzy,
yes.
I think,
one and done, one semester
hey,
and done.
Yeah, I mean, I think the inside joke is he's Chicago's favorite son, even though he was only there a few weeks.
Yeah.
But
no, and Matt, so this was the – he signed in the end of 12. He was a freshman in 13. And the summer of 12, I went and watched them the first time at the European Boys in Sweden. And just instantly was drawn to him. You know, it was kind of, there's something about him. I can't quite say what. He's not a big guy, but he just had a bit of a presence that, you know, you could tell he knew what he was doing. And at that time, you know, Pat was coaching Luke full time. He was just, he might have been kind of right at the end of his stretch as world number one in 2012. And he had become, close to Pete Cowan. He knew Pete from traveling on tour. And of course, Matt worked with Mike Walker, at the time Pete's assistant. So there was a connection there. And, you know, I think in some ways it was validation for Matt that he felt like he could go to the States and have a coach on his side that, you know, his coaches kind of vouched for and said, you know, that would be a good spot for you. And then, you know, he won the British Boys about 3 weeks later. And he came on an official visit. He came to our Halloween party in October.
Did he dress up?
He did. He dressed up as Luke Donald.
Oh, marvelous.
It was pretty, you know, tame by everyone else's standards, but Matt had to kind of take part, and we put him in kind of a Team Europe hat. It was right after the miracle at Medina. And, and then, of course, he goes on a bit of a tear the next year. Wins the silver medal at the Open. He was runner-up in the English Am. Wins the U.S. Amateur at Brookline. Plays on the Walker Cup team and was world number one wagger. And you know, when he won the U.S. Am, we knew his days were numbered. Unfortunately, you know, recruited the best player in the world. He was such a great influence on his teammates in such a short time. Player that was out here watching us this week and had played with the team this week, Josh Jamieson from St. Andrews. He was a year older than Matt. And he was even talking about it this week and just how much of an impact Matt had on him and helped make him a better golfer. And he flew yesterday to go to Fitz's wedding in New Jersey. So, it proved to be the right decision for Matt. He turned pro and got his card at Q School that year, and within, if you took his span of the 4 years he would have been in college, I think in that time he won over €6 million, won three times in the European Tour, and played in the Ryder Cup. So it was time for him to go.
Good.
That's just good reporting. That's just a good eye that he had something a little different than everyone else. As we sort of spin it forward to where you hope to be, I want to circle back to what you said about Mike Small. The gold standard, not only in the Big Ten, arguably in the country. I've been of the belief he'll find.
That's nope. Arguably. That's yeah.
Yeah, he's right there. Yeah. He's, in my opinion, he's one of the four or five best coaches in the country over the last 15 or 20 years. He finds nobodies, turns them into somebodies. Finds somebodies, turns them into really somebody, and then periodically gets that Matt Fitzpatrick and turns them into a world beater. How can you get Northwestern closer to that standard? And just as the national scene as a whole, back to as you referenced the days when Luke and Jess Daly and Scott Harrington were there, and you guys legitimately had a chance to win it all.
Yeah, and I think we're close right now. We've got a very strong team. We've got a lot of depth. We're coming off a Big Ten win last year, which is kind of the monkey off our back. It's been too long since we had a win in the conference, and truly Illinois has just been so hard to beat. They've been so good, and you know, again, even last year, you know, we beat them at Big Tens, and then they go win the regional, and then the NCAA finals by 16 shots. It's incredible what Mike's done. So, I think he's made us all better in the Big Ten, just by you know how good they've been. If you want to compete, and we're all competitive people, you know, you just get sick of losing, and I do think there's an element of that. You just have to raise your standards. And work at it every day and bring the right people in. And you know, I think for Northwestern it's a different look. We're trying to find players that really embrace and value who we are and what makes us unique. And it's important we find, you know, 9 players on our team that want to win championships at Northwestern, and that's going to look a little bit different than players elsewhere. So it's just finding the right people and helping them get better. And I think our strong suit and where our marginal gain is every year is going to be we're trying to be the best at getting better. It's a developmental program. You know, Pat's track record of helping players improve and develop with the chance to play at the next level in professional golf, I'll stack it up against anybody. And I think, you know, we're just trying to find players that really have that mindset. They want to play at the next level and are willing to put the work in to do it.
Let me clarify when I say nobodies. It's when you find people off the radar, make them good, find good ones. They're obviously all very talented individuals. But I think from my lens, watching it for 25 years, that's what Mike does. That's what you did in finding Matt Fitzpatrick. People that maybe they don't look at him and you say, no, there's something there. I like his presence. And lo and behold, it pans out.
And I kind of shouted at you. I meant that's arguably as in that's how I should have used arguably in a situation like that. Yeah, not Luke Donald being maybe the best.
What'd you say? You're only 32?
Maybe 32? The best at North. 32, yeah.
Well, David and I have you by a few years. Well, he has you by a few and I have him by a few.
So we're here at the Old Course, right? I got to play it for the first time on Monday. And then I think, and David could probably attest to this, very rare that someone gets to play at a second straight day. So I feel very fortunate, but I have a favorite hole. But I want to know, David, what are your top three favorite holes on the Old Course?
Top three favorite holes.
And then watch Burke go.
Well, so, I haven't played, so some of us work on Mondays.
I know, I felt bad. I was finishing right as the broadcast was starting one day, and I...
I'll say, and it might be the popular choice, but 17 is the best hole in the course.
Attention, Bobby Mac.
Yeah, I think he came around. He tweeted an apology.
Soft.
Yeah, he came around, but yeah, just it's a gut check hole. It's you know, it's right at the end of the round, end of a championship. You're gonna have to step up and hit a great tee shot, and then it's about the most exacting approach shot in the world. To a green that's really hard to hit. I mean, I felt like I was standing on the 17th fairway today trying to get guys to deliberately miss the green and try and make a four. And then I would just say 1 and 18 for the setting and just the feels that you get on, you know, the first tee. And then coming up 18 truly was special today. It's just, I don't know if it's just because, you know, I was enjoying the moment, but walking up 18... just that amphitheater you get with the town, you know, around the hole. It's a special place.
Burka?
You're the man that played Monday. What are your standout moments?
I would say not moments. Well, the moment was road hole up against the – I caught a flyer. I was up against the wall, and I went with putter because I can hit a putter from anywhere. I've made birdies out of a bunker with a putter before. But I whacked my ankle with the ball coming out. And it's on video, so I post it to Instagram. It's very embarrassing. But I would say my top three holes are 16, 7, and I for some reason, and this might be because I'm such a newbie, but I love the 9, 10. I love the turn. Mm-hmm. They're very gettable holes. So I guess for a bad golfer, we like holes that we can – have a little pitch shot in and maybe make a birdie depending on where the wind is. So those would probably be my favorites.
I'll abstain until I play.
You won't say anything?
Well,
okay.
I, as a viewer, as somebody on the broadcast, I don't think it would nearly be genuine if I went out and played and be like, oh, now I get it, or now I see it.
So I heard a story that, have you played it backwards?
No,
I heard a story that
they do it once a year.
Once a year in November, I think. Yeah.
I forget who it was. Someone in either golf media or something had an opportunity to come out here for that, but that was the first time they played it, and I don't know if they declined because they wanted the first time they played it to be normal.
Well, you never decline but the opportunity. But
I could have butchered the story, but it's playing backwards. It seems would be very fun.
For sure, yeah. But and if you get the chance to do that, don't decline.
Correct. It's once a year.
Another decision. Lesson. We learned yes. about how to take yeah. showers.
Well, that's
in
why I played twice, because I didn't want to decline. I got yeah. a text saying, hey, we need you tomorrow to play. I felt like I, you know.
So have you buried the lead? Did you go back-to-back days here?
Yeah.
Because he said, oh, I played on Monday. Not often do you get to play twice in a row. And oh, David, what are your favorite holes?
It's a bit of a humble brag there.
Oh, man.
I played on Tuesday. I almost dunked it on one for an eagle.
Oh, man. I need to lighten up my work schedule, apparently. We could go on. We'll sort of wind things down of where you think college golf is in 2024. What's good moving in the right direction? And what is, hey, you know what, guys? Maybe we need to rethink some things.
I love this question.
I would say fresh off the emotion of winning here and being on the Golf Channel, I feel like that's the first time I've been part of a tournament that was live on the Golf Channel, and that was really special. I'm excited to actually see the coverage. Hopefully there's a replay tonight in the hotel. So I think just the platform that the Golf Channel has given us to showcase what an amazing sport college golf is and these great venues, it's been really cool to be a part of that. So I think that's obviously going in the right direction, and certainly I think La Costa seems like that kind of special kind of venue for our championship in the spring. You know, the big question right now is this house settlement and how this is all going to pan out with how athletic departments are going to function, because we're all going to have to reimagine what our reality is, because what we've been doing in the past as athletic departments is going to change. Between the roster size limitations and the revenue share and what that's going to do to scholarships, schools are going to have to come up with more money and figure out how to be more profitable, increase revenues and cut costs. And so I don't think there's been a time in college athletics that's more pivotal right now than right now. And you know, raising money and fundraising and being able to support your program with all the things that you need to run a program that can compete on a national level is just going to be harder and harder.
Are we in a spot, and it's hard to project, but just what you shared, let's say we're having this conversation in 5 years, that 20% of the men's Division I golf teams that exist now will not exist in 2029.
Yeah, I think it's reasonable to say that some programs are going to fall by the wayside. It's just going to be business. And, I think overall golf is probably better positioned than most sports. It's small,
yeah.
You know, in the whole scheme of things, it's not a huge spend on the bottom line of the budgets of the athletic departments, you know, but in general, I do think, you know, men's sports will be cut. A lot of, athletic departments, and just to balance the books, just to balance Title IX, just to balance the scholarship offerings, it's going to be there just has to be some cuts made.
Yeah, no, I really think it's going to be crucial to fully endow your program at some point moving forward. There's a lot of unknowns too. It seems like every time I talk to a different coach, and I spent a lot of time with Mike Small, and I guess the AD at Illinois is really closely involved with all of this going on. But I think there's still a lot of questions on, how the collectives still play into this. I mean, some people think they're going to go away completely, but I mean, there's still going to be NIL.
Still going to be NIL, but it's going to hopefully be back to the true intention of what they tried to start. In that it is going to be based on that athlete's name, image, and likeness and what their marketability is and market value is, not a group of boosters paying money into a collective to just pay for play. The revenue share is going to come from a more strategic lens from the whole department and figure out who gets what. Obviously, football is going to get the lion's share at most schools. I don't know if there's going to be much revenue share for golf. Mm-hmm. Maybe there'll be a few, but certainly NIL opportunities. I think the potential for increased scholarships in golf is probably the biggest wild card.
Yeah.
And you're going to have inequity in terms of, you know, if there's 18 teams in the Big Ten, there might be a handful that offer 8 or 9 or whatever the maximum is that we're going to be allowed. And there's going to be a lot that offer 4.5, just like where we're at right now, because their school is going to say, you know what, we can't do that. We need to give that money to this sport.
And there's still the question, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, but that extra 4.5 scholarship, if you have all 9 of your players under a quote-unquote full scholarship, that extra 4.5 counts against your 22 million, you know, 23, 24 million revenue
salary
share
cap,
total.
Yeah, basically, yeah. But again, I think, so for instance, at Northwestern, we have our makeup of 19 sports is unique to us. So you're trying to balance the Title IX implications and balancing that with your student body ratio. And the challenge for us is we're a little heavy. I think we're about 56% female, our student body. So then the athletic scholarships need to reflect that. And when you have football, it just tips the scale so much on the male side that it's hard for us. I think all of our women's sports essentially kind of are at their max limit right now. They couldn't offer more scholarship than what they already do. And you know these new roster sizes coming in actually reduce some of the roster sizes on women's sports. So for a school like us, it's a different challenge to say an engineering school like Georgia Tech or even Purdue within the Big Ten. I think they're a little bit more 60-40 tipped on the men's side. So every campus has unique problems to this solution. We're all going to have to get creative and reimagine what we have to do to stay competitive.
Yeah, ever-evolving situation that we'll continue to watch, monitor, talk about. Any final thoughts before we wrap it up, Brentley, with David Ingles?
Well, now that we're talking about changing, ideas for college golf, projecting ahead, telling the future, after 3 days here and experiencing it, watching this on TV last year, I would love to see the once every 4 years international trip/tournament. I would love to see that rule go away. I would love to see, I don't know why it's in place, but I would love to see teams not be hamstrung by, because the Stanford men, they take a senior trip every 4 years. They can't come and play this event. So I would love to see that rule go away and teams allowed to play more, whether if they want to play in the Bahamas and come play the St. Andrews Links Collegiate, they should be able to do that. So that's my final thought. You agree with that?
I'm on board with that. Yeah, sign me up. I support that.
David, an absolute pleasure to take a bit of time out on this Wednesday shortly after the team victory to do College Golf Talk. I want to say it's live. A podcast really isn't live, but we're on the road. We're in Scotland. It's 8:10 local, 3:10, 3:15 back on the East Coast of the U.S. And, I mean,
we Bradley's, found free
Bradley's
beers.
Double fisted here.
Yeah, he's got
the
Iron Brew.
The cans are closed.
What is Iron Brew?
Iron Brew, it's Scottish soda. It outsells Coca-Cola in Scotland. It's God's water. You should try it.
You want one?
Yeah, I want one.
All right, there we go.
Does it mix well with anything?
Is it like an orange soda?
Sure.
No, not really.
I think the consensus on our team, we did a taste test, and it tastes like bubble gum. That's what they said.
Burke goes out. David, appreciate it. Congratulations to you and the team. David Ingles, the men's golf coach at Northwestern. Brentley, a pleasure to do this from abroad. Well, I'm headed home, then off to Oklahoma City for the Stevens Cup. So we'll do it again late next week.
I'm not playing here next year or tomorrow. It may be next year.
It wouldn't shock me for someone that's flying home Friday, but we'll get that on next week's podcast. Right. Again, appreciation to David. For Brentley, I'm Burko. We'll see you next time right here on College Golf Talk.